Welcome to a whole new world with Deloitte, where we will be unlocking new possibilities for organizations. I am Noor Khoury, your host for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to our first episode of A Whole New World with Deloitte. Thank you for tuning in, and joining us today are some of our leading minds at Deloitte from across our business. I would like to start by introducing Anoush, our Deloitte AI Institute leader, Mini Dubey, our emerging tech and innovation leader, and Damien Reagan, our sustainability reporting assurance leader. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
In today's episode, we will be talking about the future-oriented experiences that we will be bringing to Jitex Global. Let me start with asking our first question to Anoush. What is the significance of AI in today's business landscape, and how is it taking us into a whole new world?
Thanks, Noor. So it is one of the most important challenges and problems of today's time when we talk about AI. And at Deloitte, one of the things we fundamentally believe is generative AI is the iPhone moment for AI. Because for the first time, you are actually having algorithms having human-like intelligence where you cannot differentiate between a human and an AI. And today it's happening. This would have been unthinkable 2 or 3 years ago. And we've had decades of technology progress that's all come together to make this happen. We've had 6 decades of Moore's Law that has enabled massive computing power. We've had 4 decades of internet with trillions of data. And we've had at least 2 decades of mobile and cloud to get that all of that power access at our fingertips, right? And therefore, it is changing entire industries and sectors. If you take the example of the recent events in Hollywood, where all the artists are striking against copyright protection and law, because AI is now able to generate stories, poems, and there's even a first feature film, animated feature film, completely written by AI coming out in the next few months. And there's upending entire industries and sectors. And what we fundamentally believe are companies trying to adapt. The key differentiation between what was happening earlier in AI to now is the sheer pace of change. Some of this is happening at an unprecedented scale, right? ChatGPT was the light, the fuse to the fire, if you will. And after that, the pace of innovation is surprising everybody. Every other week, every other month, you have new innovations happening, new technologies happening, and companies are figuring out how to respond. And we think this is, there is a law widely known in the industry called Amara's Law. And what it essentially states is, you know, we tend to overestimate the impact of something in the short term and underestimate its impact in the long term. And that's precisely what's happening right now. If you look at Gartner's recent report, it said AI, generative AI, is on the top of the hype cycle, right? And no technology ever can live up to that hype, right? Even doesn't matter how good it is. So therefore, we are going through that phenomenon where people are overestimating what's going to do in the short term, but massively underestimating what it's going to do in the medium to long term. And what we are talking to our clients about is to really think about this as a capability and not as a technology so that they can actually leverage it to get the benefit that the business needs.
Very interesting. I mean, as you're speaking, I'm thinking this technology has been around for quite a while. Why is it that it has exponentially, you know, changed and is changing? And why is it that now we're talking about AI and not 6 or, you know, or 10 years ago?
You're right. In fact, the first definition of AI was actually coined in the year 1956. So if you think about it, it's been around for decades, right? 3 factors have contributed to this now. And without any one of those 3, this could not have happened. The first one is massive computing power, right? The amount of processing power our chips today in our phones have is 1,000 times the power of the computers that sent the first man to the moon. Right? Just to give you an idea of the scale at which this has changed. That's number one, right? Number 2, we were generating about 3 decades ago, we were generating maybe 1 GB of data every day. Today we are generating 1 petabyte, which is roughly about thousands of order of magnitude more than what we were generating 3 decades ago. And that amount of data is required to train all of these models. That's number two. Number three, the algorithms have actually gotten smarter. There was a breakthrough in algorithms to actually process language like humans do. So how do we as humans interact with our world? We have eyes, vision, we have computing power and data now to actually have video and being able to process all of that video. We hear with our ears, audio. We speak with our mouth, language. We understand our world around us through these senses. And that's what AI has gotten so good at. Vision, language, and audio in order to actually make this work. So those are the three things as to why it's happening now. It's almost like the perfect storm of events that led to this point.
Amazing. Mini, tell us what is unlimited reality?
So, Noor, tempting as it is for me to talk about the technological aspects of it, I really want to talk about the humanizing part of unlimited reality first. I think unlimited reality is about immersive experiences and a deep-seated desire at a human level to be able to live in worlds that we are more comfortable with, which would be the 3D world, right? And for a long time now, in spite of the proliferation of in the internet, we're still used to the 2D elements of it. So I think what started off, say, from a gaming perspective and people getting used to the 3D aspect of it. What's happened since then, sort of stealing Anusha's point here about the amplification and the coming together of a lot of technologies, which then has today left and enabled our people to create experiences using immersive and spatial technologies. So which are these technologies? To give you an example, we're talking about virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality. Generated AI has come in and, you know, spurred things on a thousand times more. But also in terms of some of the other underlying capabilities from a blockchain perspective, quantum computing power. So it's all of these different technologies coming together to create a world which we imagine ourselves to be in, which is immersive, right? And much more real compared to our lives today. And really at allowing us to integrate our physical and our digital worlds. So that for me is the umbrella, long-winded explanation, I know, but touching upon the human aspect of it, as well as the technological advancements in the last few years.
Could we say that the metaverse is unlimited reality, or how similar or different is it?
So the metaverse is in the sense that it is one of the technologies and that fall under the umbrella term, but it is not just that, right? So for me, the metaverse is one part of unlimited reality or extended reality, but it's not the only one, right? And for the metaverse to come to life, there's a lot of other things in terms of the Web3, in terms of interoperability, all of these things which have, for it to really reach its potential, all of these different factors would need to be there. So yes, metaverse is an immersive world. It is about the physical, the integration of the physical and digital world, but it isn't one part of it. The other part is also in terms of augmented reality and things, so.
Going on to sustainability, why should companies be concerned about sustainability?
Okay, well, companies, as we are on the planet, and we're all exposed to changes of climate. We're all contributing to changes of climate and pollution change and every impact we have on the environment or society, and companies are a major contributor of that. So companies have a social impact, a social license in order to operate, but also they have risks and opportunities connected to sustainability and climate change particularly. So as a business, can they secure the supply chains if there is climate change affecting their supply chains themselves from other countries? Their markets, consumers are now looking for different goods, different services of a sustainable nature. And therefore, what people buy, what people sell, is all coming under this brand of sustainability in some way. So companies need to be aware of that so they can move quickly. Opportunities and therefore risks. If companies are in charge of that and understand it, they can then adapt quickly, and that's what's important.
I'm just curious, though, isn't that with all of that, I'm also hearing a lot of things about greenwashing, mm-hmm. right? Where does that come into the picture?
So greenwashing is a situation where a company over-exaggerates it's the green benefits of a product or a service, or it's hypocritical in that it's saying one thing, it does one thing, but actually does something very, very different. Mm-hmm. So an asset manager, for instance, who is saying it's running sustainable funds but isn't, a bank that said it's funding very, very great, green projects, but the majority of the lending goes to non-green. So these are examples of greenwashing. So what's important is that the companies are actually transparent about what they're doing, and they're not over-exaggerating the green benefits of product services or being hypocritical.
And from a sustainability perspective, what are, like, if you think about what are the top three, top of mind things for somebody who's running a company today from a sustainability standpoint?
Okay, interesting. So Deloitte did a survey earlier in the year of the C-suite, and way over 60% of respondents recognized that climate change was a major risk to the business. In some ways, as I said, at the supply chains or impact staff, impact on markets. So right at the very top, I mean, climate change is the big one. Climate change is what's triggering global events in terms of weather change patterns and various things. So it's right up there. I think there's also questions about regulatory change, because regulation is coming in to actually manage some of these risks. Countries are making commitments to net zero. And that's impacting industry. Let's say in Europe, post 2035, companies can't make cars with internal combustion engines. They can't sell them, so they have to move to EV. So regulatory change is therefore quite big and very important to companies. And I think sort of finally, companies just need to be aware that sustainability is also actually an opportunity. So this is where the Elon Musk of the world start building whole plants, whole companies built on EV. Other companies look at alternative energy as being a new solution, particularly here in the Middle East. It's that energy transition from petrochemical effectively to alternative energy. So opportunities, I think, is the third big point.
Fascinating.
And I just wanted to add, though, Jamin, because you did talk about opportunities, right? I just feel opportunities come in different forms. Mm-hmm. And we at Deloitte are, you know, very passionate and committed to our sustainability agenda. And we also view it as an opportunity to connect and reconnect with our people, because we see a lot of pull coming in from a next generation as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole thing about sustainability and walking the talk, I think what we're doing, quite a bit of it is also focusing on the culture and bringing a lot of these things together in terms of innovation, culture, and digital, mm-hmm. and how digital can be an enabler. So you're absolutely spot on. Just wanted to highlight that opportunities come in different form in terms of businesses, but also in terms of engagement and mm-hmm. connecting and reconnecting with our people.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Sustainability is such a broad umbrella. Yeah. It's covering environmental. It's covering social issues, governance issues. It's thinking about how we interact with others, mm-hmm. primarily. So I think the point you're making here is very much about how do we as people within a business interact on a personal level, on a career aspirational level, but actually on services. You know, we can talk about AI. We can talk about, you know, other IT challenges in other parts of the department, for instance, and how they link together and what the market can actually have. So I think sustainability is a way of bringing things together in a way that people haven't really thought about in the past.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one, because in AI, one of the big things that we are, as a community, are talking about is the amount of power a lot of these algorithms are taking to run on these massive power-hungry chips, because AI, by design, is very power-hungry, therefore consumes a lot of energy, right? And therefore, part of it is what kind of energy do you use? But also, there's an equal impetus on the people who are developing AI, like our community, who have to make more efficient algorithms that can run on lower power. And that's a massive area of focus, because as we introduce these new technologies to the world, we have to be cognizant of the fact that it has to be done in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. So there's interactions, to your point, like you said, touches all aspects of an organization and what they do.
No, and absolutely, Anush, and just on that point, right? So at Deloitte, we recognize that. And I'm so glad that we're having those conversations at this stage, right? One of the things that we've looked at is how can digital and all these digital technologies be a responsible enabler? And this is something at Deloitte, a challenge that we have called the Care Mittal NASA Challenge, which looks at how can sustainability, innovation, and digital come together and for the greater good when it comes to our planet. So you're spot on, and I'm so glad that we're asking all of these questions of ourselves.
Makes sense.
Even with the growth.
Absolutely. I mean, as we talk about technology and how it enables, how important is technology in enabling this transition for, you know, accelerating it for companies and organizations?
Yeah, certainly. So technology is key to effectively us moving forward on sustainability. Companies can't just reduce emissions and hope to save the world. They can't just create brand new products and hope to save the world from climate change. Technology's got to come in and actually help to the point earlier, as businesses grow, they have to do it in a way that's sustainable. It's not over-increasing the emissions, let's say. It's got to be smart moves in whatever happens. So technology is there to improve products and services and to make things more efficient, but also allows companies to better understand what's actually happening and the impact. So I'm thinking here of reporting. So collecting data within the business, data which possibly hasn't been collected before. It's non-financial data on emissions or pollution or water use or diversity within the business. These are numbers that are collected somewhere in the business, but not necessarily in a very robust way, not in a way where the calculations are really checked or the evidence. And that's the challenge I have in looking at reporting of companies. It's not what I would call a robust way of doing it. Technology helps to bring in robustness and clarity and identifies the evidence. So that's just one way that companies can do that. When they get data, you can start using it. You can start looking at targets. You can start looking ahead at what's actually happening, where you want to go with, let's say, climate emissions. And you can make decisions. Now, there's a tool that Deloitte's developing called Greenlight that does exactly that. It helps companies get data, gather the emissions, create baselines, start thinking about, right, what's our target, and then stress test that to see if it actually works. So that's very powerful, so companies can actually start making good decisions and monitor those. And what the decisions allow them to do is to actually take action. And action, they can start offsetting potentially, or they can start thinking of new products, new areas, new operations, and then they can start minimizing the emissions as they grow the business itself. So technology can enable an awful lot of change within business and really help the companies move forward.
Anoush, what is the Deloitte AI Institute's role in driving AI adoption across the Middle East and globally? I mean,
one of the key differentiators, or the founding ethos of AI Institute as Deloitte, that no other professional services firm has in the market, is we look at ourselves as somebody who's educating the market on research fact-based perspectives on where AI is and where it is heading. Because it is a very noisy world when it comes to AI. A lot of hype. And the idea of the Institute is to be research-focused, acting as a bridge between all the research and noise that's happening outside in the market and the clients and the business that actually needs to generate value from this. And how do we bring that to them in a way that we kind of almost carve the path to adoption of AI through connecting the dots between research and application? That's one of our main focus areas. And when we talk to clients, we always talk to them about why something is done the way it is done when it comes to AI. What are the guardrails? What are the risks that they should be assessing and looking at when it comes to AI? Those are things that we are talking to them about, informed. I'll give you a very simple example. With large language models that are coming up in generative AI, one of the things that they're not really good at is being proficient in language other than English. In the Middle East, being able to have that conversation in Arabic and in different dialects in different countries is super important. Otherwise, that becomes a barrier to adoption of that technology in the market. And we are actually doing research on, okay, which large language models are really good at Arabic? What models should be using for what use cases so that you're able to get the impact in the market and the adoption in the market, right? So that's one example of how we are bringing that to life. Similarly, the other area, the other side of the coin, is also helping clients incubate a lot of these capabilities, because a lot of them don't know where to start. They have the issues like, where do I start? I get a lot of these, you know, texts, you know, people talking about it at a conference, but how do I get started? How do I make it more real, practical? So we helped them with that. So those are two areas we focus on with the broad theme of, you know, driving adoption and generating value, because that's what matters at the end of the day.
But Anush, just on that, right? Because you hit the nail on the head, just in terms of, because there's a lot of hype around it. There's also, of course, a lot of interest. Now, one of the things that we, you and I have talked about is in terms of how can the unlimited reality, the immersive experience and the spatial technologies that we're talking about, how can generative AI empower that even further? So be the humanizing front end of it, powered by AI. And one of the things that we are working on is the whole concept of the virtual concierge, right? Because for a long time, we've been trying to, you know, there has been elements of how do we actually use AI and digital to be able to make some of these routine conversations, right? Make it more human. And I think things like the virtual concierge across different industries, you know, it could be from an education perspective, it could be financial services. And I think that is an area that we want to explore more of and across different industries. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely, Mini. Your point was spot on, because AI as a technology can be very threatening to a lot of people in terms of their jobs, in terms of what they do, and it might change entire industries and sectors. Having that layer from a experience standpoint to make it more human and the front end, so that people are able to adopt it and also feel like they can evolve with AI. And as we talk about it in the Institute, we call it the age of with. And I think your point about the unlimited reality makes it really, brings to life that human concept. So it makes sense.
Mini, I mean, you were just talking about this digital concierge, right? What is the potential, really, of virtual reality, and, you know, what other types of applications can we have?
Yeah, so Noor, I just feel that what we've touched upon is just a tip of the iceberg, right? We're seeing so many different opportunities. So if you look at the Middle East as... I think with the fact that we're talking about the digital economy, right, and that's driving a lot of the national agendas across the region. You're talking about transformation in terms of whole economies, you know, moving away from, say, fossil fuels to the digital age. That itself is creating, right? And if you look at the fact that we've got in our region, we've got digital natives who are demanding a lot of these experiences, right? So if you look at that, if you look at all of these different factors, there's so many different areas, right? If you look at digital twins, so if you look at from a construction industry, we can see a construction boom in terms of all of the different areas. The very fact that you could potentially, at the design phase itself, look at the simulation and understand the impact of a design before the physical construction actually takes place, that in itself is not only is that more efficient, but from a sustainability perspective, much better, so that we don't make mistakes in design, right? So digital twin and the replica of our world, even before it's created, is driving opportunities across so many different areas, everything from construction to healthcare. Then there's also about augmented reality and mixed reality, which is really augmenting our worlds with additional data that then allows us to take decisions in a timely fashion. And then, of course, we've got the whole virtual reality bit in terms of the capabilities from a metaverse perspective to be able to democratize creativity using things like blockchain at the foundation level. But also in terms of empowering people to collaborate better across geographies. So this is where virtual reality also comes in. So I just feel that, you know, with everything that's been happening, the amplification of technologies, we're really only at the tip of the iceberg. And with Apple's, you know, Vision Pro coming in, now with Meta's new Quest 3, there's lots more that's going to be happening at this space. So watch this space is all I would say.
So for Mini, I have one question. So when you think about clients kind of embarking on this, what are some common pitfalls that they run into that you've seen, and how do we kind of help them avoid those?
Sure. So Anoush, at Deloitte, we call something as the responsible metaverse, but also then responsible experiences. It's just extending that thought, right? Mm. So some of the things that when we talking to clients and advising them, we always say that it should be a case of business strategy driving technology. So it shouldn't be a technology for the technology's sake, right? So the use case becomes that much more important. So that's one thing that we always tell our clients. The other thing is it's good to try out from a POC's perspective. So have a proof of concept, have a minimal viable product or MVP. So start small, learn from it, and then extend and scale, right? And that also helps from a culture of innovation, right? So to embrace agile. So that would be the second aspect. And the third aspect, and this is something so close to my heart, is about not compromising at all when it comes to things like security and safety. Mm-hmm. Because not only are we at an age where everything's happening so fast, we want to make sure that our next generation are protected, right? And we just want to make sure that we've got the laws, the policies, the regulations, and the tech all aligned to provide that safe environment for everybody to benefit from it. So these, for me, are the top three things that we tend to advise our clients to be careful about.
And I mean, and that actually brings me to my next question, which is on AI. I mean, how can AI solutions replicate human-like interactions? And, you know, what are the risks with that as well?
Yeah, there is, to what Minnie and I were talking about earlier, there is an aspect of the experience that touches the user, which is the humanizing element of whether it is a digital concierge or an easy to access, you know, app or a browser, which makes it easier for them to have that interaction. The real unlock that has happened in terms of the model itself and the algorithm itself has been the ability of the algorithm to replicate a lot of how we see the world. So to my earlier point, we see the world through our eyes. When we drive a car, it's our eyes processing the data, inputting the data, and our brain processing it. And that's essentially what self-driving car technology, if you think, look at companies like Tesla and other companies who are developing self-driving capabilities, that's what they're focusing on, which is having cameras, which is similar to input data, and then processing that information, right? When we talk about generative AI and language, a lot of what we understand the world is through language. When we have thoughts, language is how we communicate. When we want to understand others around us, language is how we understand around us. Every knowledge that we've ever known is through the medium of language. Now, with large language models, that language problem has been cracked by the algorithms. So it's able to have that human-like interaction because it's able to understand coding, understand studies. For example, if you've seen the recent results of some of the benchmarks of large language models, some of the language models are able to beat a human on law exams, passing bar, because we understand law through the medium of language. And that now that the algorithms are able to understand language, they're able to understand any subject and knowledge that a human being understands. And that's how they kind of interact in that knowledge. And that gives us the power. And that power is now accessible through browsers and so on. And when we talk to clients, why we tell them this is real, yes, there is hype around it, and why we tell them it is real, and they should be thinking about how they imbibe this into reimagine how their business works is precisely because of this fact, that it is able to understand the world through how we typically understand and how our brain processes.
But Anoush, I have a different perspective, right? So yes, all of those bits about algorithm and language and the fact that it's able to replicate in many ways, right? But what truly makes us human is the empathy part of it. And hopefully we are some time away from AI being able to replicate.
We are a long time away. We still have our competitive advantage when it comes to the empathy. I think that's never going to go away.
It
can mimic, and the underlying principle we've always spoken about when client says is it going to threaten our business and jobs, and we've said a human plus AI is always greater than human or AI. And that's really important to understand. Even when governments try to make laws about this, when we go talk to some of the governments in terms of regulations and asking them to be mindful, we say the buck never stops with the algorithm. The buck stops with the human, right? And that is our competitive advantage. The accountability, the empathy, and our ability to have that emotion, which is not language, is our competitive advantage. And we increase that through working with AI. So to your point, I don't think that's going away anytime soon.
That's a relief.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I think it needs a while as well, because I think it's beyond the emotional aspect. I mean, it's also about, accuracy, and, you still need the human to be very much involved,
And we talk about human in the loop. When we talk about, as Deloitte, we have a responsible AI framework that we kind of look at through the lens when we talk to clients on this topic. And one of the underlying principles of that framework is human in the loop. And it's very hard to know. And a lot of these models are hallucinating, right? They are not as good as the data that you feed into them, right? They tend to hallucinate, make up stuff. And a lot of that is configurable, right? So a bad actor can, say hallucination, and the model will, spit out nonsense, right? So a lot of that, needs to be governed through that framework, and having a human in the loop is so critical to it. Our responsible AI framework, which you'll see on the AI Institute website, kind of talks about how organizations should think about working with AI in the right way.
Absolutely. Anushin, just one other point, right? Because you talked about the risks. I also see a risk coming in from another factor with all of these technologies coming in hard and fast, is this whole bit of digital divide. Right? So we just need to be careful as the pace of technology grows, that we take everyone with us on this journey. And one of the things that I worry about a lot when I look at, say, my parents or my parents' generation is, are we doing enough to take them along the journey? Are we doing enough to ensure that they understand the impact of these? Because I understand from a future generation's perspective, and they're taking it like fish to water, right? Mm-hmm. But we need to take everyone along on this journey. I think that's the responsible thing to do.
I was going to say, I mean, it is very much a whole new world. And, we really need to, we need to go through that journey and go all together.
And it is important for our clients as well, because they are target customers for a lot of clients we work with, right? So when we talk to them, who are you developing this for, right? Who's your target consumer, right? If your target consumer, you can use all of these technologies, right? AI, embedded in your products, but if it's not reachable and understandable, and the customer is not able to adopt them, ultimately they're not going to get value from their customer. They're going to lose that customer, right? So for clients also, it's a very important point to say, as you're developing these technologies, and you made a very good point earlier, which is to what business strategy and goal? Mm-hmm. Who are my target consumers? What am I offering to them? And how is this going to help that in order for me to, grow my business and being able to have that, reach that customer on a consistent basis.
Absolutely.
So we have big plans to be at JITEX in a couple of weeks. And I think it's, I'd like to touch upon, what are we doing there? I mean, we want to showcase the best we have at Deloitte. And so if we can just get some insight into, what are the assets, or what is it that we're really going to be showcasing at JITEX? Anush.
We have quite a bit of assets that we want to show our clients and all the participants coming at JITEX. It's going to be, we are super excited about it. And as I'm trying to find the right words as we kind of talk about this. So one of the things we are showcasing is, as clients embark on this journey of leveraging generative AI in their organization to achieve their business goals, how can they do that faster and better? And we have an asset that we call Al-Nayr, which we have developed here in the Middle East by resources in the Middle East for the Middle East market, which helps companies accelerate the pace at which they can get this to market and much faster than what otherwise they would be able to do, right? That's going to be super cool. And we hope people like it. And we think it's really cool and fascinating. So I hope our customers enjoy it. So far, we've had a lot of success in the market with it in terms of clients are hungry for, doing these things faster. We always, business doesn't wait for anybody. Executives want the results. And this helps them get those results faster. So we've had really good initial success in the market, which we are hoping to, get that traction at Jitex as well. The other thing is we're kind of doing a lot of assets around what Mini and I talked about earlier, which is how do we marry that with a human interface? So we are kind of showcasing use cases which are specific to certain industries, whether it is banking, whether it is certain functions like HR, IT, showcasing some of those use cases, bringing that to life and saying, look, these are things that you could actually be doing within your organization to change your businesses today.
Sounds really exciting. Mini, are we bringing any unlimited reality to Jitex?
Of course. A whole new world, in fact. So just extending Anusha's thought, right? So we're starting off with an asset, what we're calling our virtual concierge, which is, again, made for the Middle East, but for the world, right? And we are going to showcase our virtual concierge is going to support the Deloitte booth. So very excited about that. But what I'm hoping is that sort of helps the imagination and people can look at all of the different industries where a virtual concierge would come in handy. Equally excited about the assets that we have from an automotive perspective. So we're showcasing capabilities from a virtual reality as well as augmented reality perspective. And then we're also showcasing our work that we have from a digital twin. So we're looking at what we have from a real estate because that's an area that's picking up very quickly. We're also looking at digital twins from a manufacturing perspective. So really excited to have all of these experiential demos that we have. So it's about hopefully people coming in and not just talking about the whole new world, but experiencing a whole new world with Deloitte.
Amazing. Sounds really cool. And Damien, I know you touched upon the green light. Mm-hmm. Assets. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about it.
So it's a very powerful tool, very usable tool as well, but it allows companies to effectively identify emission data and collate it and be able to then use it effectively to monitor emissions and also start testing different strategies, abatement pathways, which is effectively thinking of different approaches to reducing emissions, whether it's operational or offsetting and all those areas. So companies can actually trial and use the tool to come up with a strategy. When they get a strategy and they can monitor the strategy and they can feed that strategy, they can make decisions to make certain investments or reduce certain investments or target different markets, offset. All these things can be done through the tool, through the information the tool then gives the company. Very exciting.
Amazing. So COP28 is happening in the UAE in a few months. And clearly, it's one of the most important events related to sustainability. Deloitte will be there. And I think, I'd love to hear how you view the role of technology in accelerating the transition.
Right. So COP28 is a very, very exciting event. 50,000 people will be coming into Dubai and we'll be at the old Expo 2020 site where it's effectively a big circus. It's a central area where the governments get together effectively and reconfirm and commit to climate change and targets. And then around that, you've got a whole host of companies, NGOs and communities talking about sustainability, every aspect of sustainability, diversity, talking about emissions, of course, and pollution, but also services. And companies will be there talking about how they work. Now, technology is going to be fundamental to a lot of the solutions, as I mentioned a little earlier. There's a number of themes with this particular COP. One of the themes is about accelerating the energy transition. Effectively. So how can we move from the old state of fossil fuel to the new state of alternative? How much faster can we go? And technology plays a role in it, whether it's what I call hard technology, so solar or machines changing, systems changing, or digital solutions to that whole process. That's coming in. The second big theme is sustainable finance. So you've got to finance this somehow. So where's the money coming from? How is it being linked to sustainable products or targets? So carbon markets are being pulled together, and then carbon markets will be based effectively on AI, as blockchain, all these sort of technologies are coming in to facilitate offsetting carbon credits, bring transparency and robustness to effectively a new financial system coming through. So those two things, the change the environmental approach, but also the financing of it, needs technology. And I think we'll see a lot of technology advances coming out of this particular COP.
Great. And Noor, as you know, at Deloitte, we've had a head start, right, in preparation for COP, but also because we are so passionate about it. So at our D Studio, we had a sustainability event. And to your point, we actually focused on how, again, digital and other technologies can responsibly enable sustainability. So we had public-private partnerships and the need for maybe greater collaboration across the board to be able to bring that to life. The other thing that we, of course, were very passionate about is having sustainability as a culture, right? It's about walking the talk. It's about these little acts that you do every day that will make a huge, huge difference. And that is something at Deloitte that we're doing. One of the things that we've introduced is the Chemical Nasser Challenge, which is really reaching out to our people and saying, what can we do collectively, collaboratively? And what are the kind of solutions that we can take to our clients that are innovative, that are sustainable, and use digital as a responsible enabler? So that's the way that we are approaching things.
Amazing. And what about AI? How can AI help in this transition?
So I see sort of two opportunities when we talk about AI and sustainability. One, through the AI Institute, we've actually recently launched a carbon footprint calculator, which allows you to understand how much carbon footprint are you as an organization actually leaving. So it's actually available online to check out. It's actually really cool in terms of leveraging different data to Damien's point and analyzing that information and leveraging machine learning to say, if given a certain set of inputs and parameters, given the challenge around measuring all of this very effectively, how can companies actually estimate what's their carbon footprint based on their business parameters today? So that's one way in which we are bringing that technology to help measure some of these very effectively. And I agree with Simon, which is, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And a lot of that data is necessary. And when data is not there, where you can rely on some of these algorithms to actually estimate based on certain given inputs, to be able to have, you know, somewhere close to accurate prediction of what it end up likely be, in order for you to make that decision and action to do that. That's number one. Number two, and we touched upon this briefly earlier, which is, how can you actually develop AI in a sustainable way? And having those algorithms to run on, you know, low energy and having to consume less and less energy and making the algorithms more efficient. One of the recent innovations that we are currently experimenting with, hoping we bring it to market soon, is having the ability for these large language models, which require massive GPUs, which are currently hot in demand and very difficult to get a hold of and costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. How can you run those models on your laptops and your phones using your existing infrastructure and servers? And how can you optimize it to run on that, which will consume way less energy for the same output that you want to do? So that's another angle in which I think there's a lot of potential for you to be surfaced.
And if I just extend your thought, right, Anish, because you did talk about the whole carbon footprint and how can data be available, right? The way that we're approaching it from an unlimited reality perspective is we want that data to be available at people's at their fingertips, right? So the way that we're visualizing it, and we do have a solution within Deloitte where you could look at, so using your phone as a mechanism, you could actually use that and via augmented reality, that data could then be put on top. So at any given point in time, you are very aware of the actions that you're taking and the impact that it would have. We have a similar solution, say, from a pollution perspective. So I think it's great that from a generative AI, we are providing those capabilities and the collaboration with Unlimited Reality, where we are bringing that data and that information to life to enable people to take those decisions every day at every instant.
our time together has ended. Thank you very much. I mean, it was great to hear about, you know, the AI Institute and what it brings to the Middle East, about this new technology and how, you know, how it is shaping our new world. Many thank you for the perspective on unlimited reality and all of the potential and how we can really apply it back to the real world. And Damien, it was great to hear about sustainability and about how technology is going to help us accelerate the journey towards the transition that we all aspire to. Thank you for tuning in, and look forward to talking with our new set of guests from JITEX at our booth, at our space. So see you there.